tennis. Welcome back to Game On, and it is hard to believe on the 31st of August that only the second Grand Slam of the year is about to take place. But before we get on to this week's tennis at the US Open, Stephen Higgins has joined us. I think we should talk about this new male players union that Novak Djokovic and Vasek Pospisil are setting up. Stephen, what is the plan behind this?
If you aren't tired of acronyms, we've got a new one for you. The Professional Tennis Players Association, PTPA, which sounds awfully like the ATP, but the players say it isn't the same thing. Basically, Novak Djokovic and Vasek Pospisil have been leading this movement for a few years of trying to get a greater share of revenue, particularly from the Grand Slam. It's said that the Grand Slams pay out about 15% roughly of the revenue to players and prize money. They argue that with, say, American sports, baseball, basketball, American football, it's closer to 50%, so they want a much bigger share. Now, there's an argument there about they're not the same type of sports, obviously, because, say, Wimbledon, Roland Garros, the US Open, Australian Open, they're paying for the sports infrastructure of their country. They're also paying for, you know, redeveloping the campuses themselves of where the tournaments are held. But it came to a head over the weekend where, just on the cusp of, as you say, the first Grand Slam of the pandemic, only the second one this year, that Novak Djokovic had sent a letter to the ATP players saying that he wanted to create kind of roughly the first union since the formation of the ATP in 1972. They signed up about 50 or 60 players to it. They took a picture replicating the nine of Billie Jean King when she set up the WTA. But notable absentees in terms of at the actual event itself and who haven't signed the letter include Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Andy Murray, Dominic Thiem. So it has then been, when they announced that they're going to do this, all the Grand Slams and the ATP and WTA came out strongly saying, we don't favour this. We don't agree with you setting up your own union or your own association. So now we're in a state of flux to see what are they going to do next.
Just on all of this, Stephen, there's two ways that it's been analysed. One is that this is never going to get off the ground without the support of the big names like Federer and Nadal, who are still on the council. But the other argument is that it could bring about a far more equitable life for those further down the rankings and those who don't advance to the latter stages of the major tournaments. We can debate either side, but one thing that appears to be the case is that it's incredibly fractious and is likely to get far more so, particularly when such big names are on opposite sides of the divide.
Yeah, I think it's another situation where social media has amplified the divide in the sense that it's become Nadal, Federer versus Djokovic on the court and then off the court. But you wonder if Roger Federer had brought forward the proposal, would everyone think it's great? You know, in a sense, because particularly after the Adria Tour fiasco that Novak Djokovic was involved in organising, where loads of players tested positive, you're wondering how this is going to turn out with his idea. Now, it's absolutely true that only the top 100 players actually make a profit in their careers. They definitely need to funnel money down to the top 200, 300, 400, etc. What Federer, Nadal, and a lot of the institutionalists, for want of a better term, would argue is there's a new head of the ATP, Andrea Gaudenzi, who only got the job a year ago. He has a plan that he wants to make things more equitable. They say give him more time, particularly in the middle of a completely unprecedented pandemic that has obviously caused chaos for the tennis tour, along with everything else in everyone's life. So they would argue not that it's a bad idea to look for equity, but now is not the time for this type of division.
Well, that one is going to keep rumbling, but back to the tennis at hand. We've no Roger Federer, no Rafa Nadal, but they're not the only ones missing. There's no Jean-Martin Del Potro either. Is this a pretty straightforward task for Novak Djokovic?
Well, if you want some crazy stats about Djokovic, there's Wikipedia pages of them. But one thing is, even in normal years, between 2007 and 2016, Novak Djokovic made at least the semifinals of every edition of the US Open. And there's only four times since 2010 when he hasn't made at least the quarterfinals of a Grand Slam that he's entered. So yeah, it would be a remarkable shock if he didn't make it through at least for the semis. He's a really good draw as well, that it's very hard to see, particularly because he played so well last week in Cincinnati, though it was moved to New York. It's very hard to see an obstacle for him, because if you don't stop him, it's very hard to stop him anyway, but if you don't stop him in the first week when he might be a bit rough or things aren't really going for him, once he gets into the second week, he just becomes, you know, Novak Djokovic that we all know. The only one maybe that could challenge, if we go by form, although it's very hard at the moment, might be Daniel Medvedev, the finalist from last year who lost to Rafa Nadal. He has a very good draw as well. It shouldn't be too much trouble for him to get into the second week. And he'd have a really interesting game to take on Djokovic. So I think of the men's draw, they would be the two that I would look at.
And in terms of the women's, obviously, Karolina Pliskova in action today. A lot of questions being asked about the fitness of Naomi Osaka. It's the far more open singles, but are you still looking at a very limited number of credible contenders?
No, I think it's actually, you could make an argument for a dozen women. While the men's draw has suffered obviously with withdrawals from the coronavirus, the women's draw has been decimated with six of the top 10 not there, including the defending champion, the world number one Ash Barty, the world number two Simona Halep, and on and on. So of the players coming in, Naomi Osaka probably performed the best, but she pulled up with a hamstring tweak at the end of Cincinnati and then didn't play the final. Victoria Azarenka, actually former number one, won the tournament and it looks very good. Serena will always be someone who's in contention, but the thing I wonder about is she hasn't reached that level of a few years ago, 2017, when she won her last Grand Slam. And she has a tricky draw with people like Garbiñe Muguruza and Amanda Anisimova in the way, and I just have a feeling now, she could of course prove me wrong, like she's proven everyone wrong over the years, that there are more players who can beat her now than used to be the case, because she isn't quite the player that she used to be of say 3 years ago. So in terms of Osaka, I would have rough favourites depending on her injury, but it's a completely open field. Expect lots of shocks and surprises.
Well, I'll be rooting for Serena Williams as she bids to win her 24th singles major. Stephen, thanks a million for taking our call.